Welcome to Downis Diversity, a main podcast that seeks to collect, document, and tell stories of people and culture in Maine. This program is brought in conjunction with Healthy Acadia, an organization whose mission is to empower people and organizations as we build healthy communities together. We are extremely excited to introduce our first guest for our first episode entitled Dawnland, my dear friend Jason Brown. Jason and his wife Donna are the driving force behind the creativity and vision of Da County and Brown and Firefly, both world-class and highly respected brands. Jason is a citizen of the Penobscot Nation, and today he shares his incredible story with us. It's titled Dawnland for a very good reason, because we are located today for our taping in a very special place. Just want to tell us more about that.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's an honor to be here. And the reason why it is so special is we are in Wabanaki land, and Wabanaki in our language means the children of the first light. And the reason is because when the sun comes up in North America, the first place that the rays hit is the top of this land, the top of Mount Katahdin.
So I think in honor of both of our traditions, it feels right to start with some form of prayer. And I see you brought a drum with you.
I did.
Would you mind sharing Indigenous people prayer?
I would be honored. I'd love to do a traditional Wabanaki welcome song for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow, that was powerful. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
I just want to thank you for making time to share your story. I think it's really important for us and for future generations to understand what it really means to be who we are and to embrace what we do and to carry on tradition. Let's go back to where it all began. I always relish my childhood and everything that it offered me in terms of a sense of identity. And I know you grew up on Indian Island, right?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So tell me about your childhood. Anything that we've maybe not had before?
Well, definitely. I'm from the Penobscot Nation, and I was fortunate to grow up on Indian Island, which is an island in the Penobscot River. The one thing that I love to say about our community is a lot of Native American tribes were forcefully relocated to, quote, reservations. Now our land got smaller and smaller and compressed. We always had a village between 10 and 12,000 years. We always inhabited this island. You know, you can really feel that lineage, that the ancestry, the ancestors there. You can feel it when you walk on the land. I can feel it, a difference when I sing there versus when I sing in other places. It's almost like an amplification, like I'm plugged in somehow. And we're really fortunate that we still live in a village that we always had. Growing up there on the island, a real strong sense of community. You know, everybody watched out for everybody else's children and shared cultural information, cultural knowledge. It was just a big sense of community, a big sense of family, and the ability to run free. I mean, we played in the woods, and there was only a couple rules, you know, don't go across the bridge to Overtown and stay out of the river, because that river can get a little dangerous, you know. And of course, what do? We would go and jump right in the river, you know.
I tell you what, I do have similar stories from my childhood, being up to a lot of mischief. Somehow, the river kept calling. So my sisters and I would get into a lot of trouble going to swim in rivers where, as you know, in Africa, anything that could kill you lives in it, you know?
Exactly.
If you think of hippos and
snakes and crocodiles, all of the above. But, you know, there's something about being so close and connected to nature. And I think that's where I feel like my connection to you comes, in the sense that I have similar stories that I could tell about, you know, running around barefoot, eating berries and swimming in the rivers and all of that. And not ever having a toy from the stores. If I needed one, I had to make one. Mm-hmm. And so I know that we've talked about this before, so I want you to tell me more about that, because creativity starts somewhere. And for most people, they can look back to where it all began, and most people always point to their childhood. So tell me about your creativity and where you think you discovered that, or where that started from.
I think it started when I was born, because I really truly believe that it's a gift and I was born with it. As a hyper creative, to be able to create in so many different areas. As a child, painting and drawing and building forts and creating worlds and writing stories and making books and just really pushing my imagination as a child. It was fun to have store-bought toys, but I would always do, as many children do so much more with them than what they were planned to do or intended for. I would always see different people, you know, doing like traditional beadwork or weaving or making fishnets and just working with their hands. I was that little kid that was a million questions, just wore the adults out. Just point like, would you just be quiet? You know, like, and I can understand that now that I'm older, how that could wear somebody out. But as a child, you can't help it. I just had an insatiable curiosity for everything around me, and I just took it all in. I always knew that I was going to be an artist, that I was going to make my life about creativity and creating. And I didn't quite know what area that would be in, but I think even as a child, I left that energy open, because I don't like to be categorized or put in a box, or, well, this is what you do and this is only what you can do because that's what you're known for. And I love to be able to explore and challenge myself in different areas.
I love that, because then in so doing, you open yourself up to endless possibilities when it comes to your creativity. And I think from the first time I got to know about you, I now know so much more about your creativity, and I know there's so much more to come. And I know you are now passionate about music, and I know that love has always been there. It's just evolved over time. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I remember my first love of music really was, I have one of my oldest memories is as a really young child, maybe 5 years old, and I had a toy piano. I just remember, couldn't get me off that toy piano. I was just on it all the time, playing it and playing it and playing it. And then one day, it was gone. I remember being told that it disappeared, you know. We don't know where it went. And I remember looking, probably for a week or two, just going around the house looking for it, looking for it, looking for it. I would open up the closet door and pull everything out and just like, I know I'm going to find it. I missed it so much, you know. And I don't know, you know, why it disappeared or what happened to it. Maybe the adults got tired of hearing me banging on it and just say, we got to get rid of that piano. I don't know. But to me, that's a really strong memory that I have as a child of loving music and feeling a connection to be able to press keys, or he would always play the guitar for us. He would sing to us, and I believe that it's kind of in there. Moving throughout my life, feeling connected to it, but didn't really have anybody to say, okay, well, you seem like you might be musical. We should get you some music lessons, or we should get you in a program, or teach you how to do something with it. You know, that never really happened for me. I remember just taking maybe like a little bit of a piano class, like when I was in junior high school, maybe for a year, maybe not even that long. You know, as I got older, it just seemed to be more and more this energy that was wanting to come out of me, you know, and just saying, I can't do anything about what did or didn't happen when I was growing up. All I can do is something about it now. It's up to me to put that energy into learning, to developing, singing, and I'm also teaching myself how to play the piano, which has been a lifelong dream of mine. It's never too late.
It really isn't. And frankly, growing up in Africa, I know a lot of friends who are now accomplished musicians. that never set foot in any music school. Sometimes there are limitations with an education, and I'm not saying that an education is not a good thing, but looking back, some of the best bands that I ever listened to were comprised of friends who started just experimenting with instruments. Mm. And my brother is a good example of that. He's an accomplished saxophone player. He has composed and written songs with zero music education. And I got the education and I haven't been able to do half the thing he's done. So I do have a lot of respect for folks like you who recognize that gift and figure a way to channel it. But I want to go back to your teenage years. How was it like being a teenager on Indian Island? I'm assuming that's where you still were.
Yeah, I was on Indian Island until seventh grade.
Okay.
And then we moved to a different town. I would say for me, it was kind of rough. And what I mean by that is, you know, my entire life from the time I was born and can remember being around other kids all the way up until seventh grade, I was around the same community, the same group of people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them were relatives, and a lot of them are just so close that it was just like one big family. And the same kids, year after year, same kids, same group. And then all of a sudden, to be removed from that and have to go to school with a bunch of other kids that you don't know any of them. And then they all find out that you're from Indian Island, so they had fun with that. But everything happens for a reason. Growing up on Indian Island, I was culturally isolated, which is good and can be considered not so good, because we live in a time where you have to know how to navigate multiple worlds. I know what my role is, and I know how to conduct myself within my community and within my culture. But you also have to learn how to do that, too, within a broader humanity, you know, and society. You know, as much as it would be for a non-native person to be dropped off on the reservation, it was culture shock for me in the other direction. When you're in your community, nobody ever says, oh, you Indian this, or you don't hear stuff like that. So when you leave that situation, you start hearing that. I mean, I'm in seventh grade, and I'm being called a drunken Indian, you know?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and I'm not even old enough to drink, you know? Learning how to navigate that, learning how to deal with that, and it made me tougher. It made me stronger. It made me more resilient. And
absolutely,
you need that resiliency for life. You really do.
I love that word, resilience. And I think I've heard that from many people who tell me that somehow my childhood prepared me for life better than theirs ever will. And it keeps going back to that word, resiliency. And frankly, the reason why I said I would go back to my teenage years is because it's the time in my life that shaped me the most. Because like you, I was going through a transition period as well of figuring out what my identity was, my place in the world, and my purpose. And then soon after that, I came to the United States. So like you, I was thrown into this world where I had to reimagine life and then have to constantly navigate between two different cultures. Right. And I referenced this in my TED Talk where I say I had to create a new tribe in a new world. And I consider myself a hybrid in many ways because I still have to hold on to some elements of my upbringing, because that's the core of who I am, that's the foundation of who I am. But I have to be open to transformation and adapting for me to be able to exist in this new world. So it resonates with me when you talk and when you reference that as well, because I know there's one thing to be born within a culture where there's expectations and taboos and it's unspoken, spoken, and you know what is expected of you, and then suddenly you're in a world where you're branded. Thank you for sharing that, because it's really powerful and it's good to recognize that. And then you meet Donna, who is one of my favorite people in the world. Not only is she beautiful, but she's one of the most intelligent people I know. I see the power behind you, Jason. So tell me a little bit about you and Donna.
Donna and I are married. We met each other at her fifth birthday party. So we've known each other since we were five. Our mothers knew each other growing up.
Was that an arranged marriage?
Well, no, it wasn't. Yeah. It sounds like it was, but it wasn't. But that would make a good story, wouldn't it? Donna's mother is Penobscot, and her father is Algonquin Anishinaabe from Maniwaki, Quebec. Donna actually was born and living in Canada.
Oh, lovely.
And her mother had come for a visit to Indian Island, and it was during her birthday. So her grandparents threw her a birthday party, and then, of course, they invited all the kids over that were of her age. And so that's how we met. And when I first remember her is when they moved back to Maine, and it was first grade. And we used to all line up outside of the school on the island in the morning. And, you know, the nun would come out and she'd ring the bell and we'd all line up by our grade. And I remember seeing her. I still remember what she was wearing. I remember how her hair was cut. We were in school together that entire time from like first grade all the way up until when I moved in seventh grade. We always remained close. We were each other's first boyfriend and girlfriend in sixth grade. Our first date, we went to see a movie, and I'm going to date myself, but it was Back to the Future. You know, she's always been strong. She's always been a strong energy.
Her beauty is disarming, though.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. She's very beautiful, and she's very composed.
Absolutely.
You know, very composed.
Lots of good energy.
Yeah, and so you almost...
And so in control.
Exactly. What you wouldn't realize, unless you took it there, is that she don't have no time for no shenanigans, you know. Donna does not start trouble, but she shuts it down, you
and
know.
And I think that's the thing that most people love about her. Because what you see is what you get.
Yes.
And what you always get is just pure love, support, bundled with intelligence and passion and commitment. I think I get all of that from her when I meet her. And it's so inspiring. And I cannot wait to have her as a guest.
She's excited.
On our podcast.
She's very excited.
I think it would be lovely for people to hear her story as well.
You are listening to Down East Diversity on WERU FM. I'm Aline Siston, your host, and my guest today is Jason Brown, and we're talking about him growing up on Indian Island.
I think of you as a hyper creative, someone who has given us so much and has so much more to give. And I know that passion comes from somewhere. So what really inspires what you do?
I really don't want to sound cliche, but I would almost say everything inspires me. And you never know where it's going to hit or where it's going to come from. I could be on my morning walk, which just recently happened, and see a springtime flower blossoming, but it's before the flowers open. And then it's just like, I just lock onto it. I'm like, that's a piece of jewelry. And I'll take a picture of it. A lot of things that I've been writing about, it's dealing with healing and working through things and putting that into my creativity. You know, everything in life is energy. We're made up out of energy. I mean, even this solid stuff, when you strip it all down, it's actually moving and it's energy and it gives off a frequency. If anything negative comes our way, which happens, it's life, instead of taking in that energy and carrying it and holding on to it, making it a part of myself, I'm gonna flip it and put it back out as creativity, something beautiful. You can change it. We can all do that. That's one thing that I love to talk about, and I find that I'm talking about it more, was I had to change my mindset and get out of victim-based mentality. I always look for opportunity, even when something not so good happens.
Yeah.
And it's not to downplay when bad things happen, but it's just really my mindset and how to change that. I find inspiration in that. I find inspiration in, obviously, my culture, in the things that my ancestors did, the beautiful designs that they created. And a lot of times, when I really know that I'm onto something or that it's gonna really click, it hits me like a punch and it just rushes through.
Mm-hmm.
I find when I really sit and try to think about what I'm gonna do and I'm really trying to develop, and that's not how it happens with me. It really is like a signal comes through, I pick up on it like an antenna, and then I get to work and then here it is. And then it's like, okay, then I kind of readjust my frequency and see what the next signal is going to be.
That's awesome, because I love your work. And I, lucky me, get to display one at my office in Northeast Taba. I cannot tell you how many people have stopped by just to look, marvel. And I wish I could record every comment and share with you. But I just want you to know there's a lot of deep appreciation for your creativity. I can tell you that. And hopefully that energy is coming through your way every time it's projected. There's something else that we've talked about, which is in every culture, you have people who are custodians of custom, of what would be considered the old. And they're those who are embracing what that culture represents now and what the future might look like. Mm-hmm. So when I think of you, I think as someone who transcends both and all. Right? I see you as someone who fully embraces what your culture is all about, and I see someone who imagines what that could be, and you're trying to create that moment for us now. How do you see yourself within the context of your culture?
Everything that I do is based in some sort of tradition, some sort of tribal story or legend, or something to have to do with the culture, which our ancestors handed that forward. Now, that's not to say that the way that it came to us in this modern time, it has to have evolved. And I know it didn't change a lot, but that energy, it's the energy, like the songs. There's no way to know if the way that I was taught songs by my elder is exactly the same way that they sang them 8,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. It may be because of the oral tradition, like this is how we do it. I really have to believe that every generation, we had our own evolving and we put our own spin on it. We have mm-hmm. everything that's going on around us at the time affecting this creativity and our culture and bringing that forward. I just do what I do and I do what I feel is right. If I had to distill it down into one main point about why I do what I do, the way that I do it, it's to show people that Native people are current and we're also of the future. And I'm not doing anything different than what my ancestors did, which was to take what was handed to them and put their energy into it and put their creativity and their twist on it and then hand it forward.
And that's really how you describe history, in my opinion, really. It's dynamic. It's a bundle of all of those energies put together, in my opinion, and the evolution continues. I also think that, and we've talked about this a few times before, how everyone thinks of Indigenous people as a thing of the past and their history, something to be learned from or just understood as something that happened or a moment in time in history that defined us, mm-hmm. as opposed to something that is alive mm-hmm. and lives amongst us. Mm-hmm. And so could you tell me a little bit more about that?
In this day and age, Indigenous people, we come in all forms. I perform under the name Firefly and Firefly the Hybrid. And the reason why I use that word hybrid, a lot of stuff that I do pulls in from the stories of our ancestors telling us that we communicated with star people and that we also came from the stars too. Mm-hmm. So you'll see a lot of outer space imagery and things in what I do. So people assume the hybrid is me trying to say like that I'm part star person or whatever. But if you believe in the traditions, then we all are. But for me, why I really use that is my whole life, born in Bangor and raised on Indian Island, raised in my culture, I'm Native, I'm Penobscot, I'm also Swedish. Mm-hmm. I have Swedish blood. Mm-hmm. Don't know really anything about that side of my family, other than that my great-grandparents came over from Stockholm mm-hmm. and as little babies, little children, and then moved to the Swedish community in northern Maine called New Sweden. So mm-hmm. I have a lot of family up there that I just don't know anything about that. Mm-hmm. And my entire life, I was called a half-breed. It was like as if I had done something wrong, like it was my fault. That's crazy.
They call my kids zebras in Kenya. Yeah. Black and white.
Yeah. So you get it from both sides.
Yeah.
You get yeah. Native people say, well, yeah. you're half white. I'm more Indian than you are.
Yeah.
And then you have non-Native people, white people, whatever. Well, yeah. you're a half breed, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, a few years ago, I wanted to come into my own energy. And I said, you know what? No, I'm not a half breed. I'm a hybrid.
Exactly. You know? That's what I call myself. I'm a hybrid. And I embrace both. And more mm-hmm. because there's more to it that
exactly.
we might not know.
Yeah.
And my kids the same way. The future does look like a mix. We exist within a certain context. So we live right here in Maine. I see us as cultural ambassadors and I also see us as contributors to Maine culture. When I moved to Maine, it took me a while to quite understand what that meant. And now I fully appreciate what Maine stands for and who Mainers are. Mm-hmm. And someone told me, you know, they won't let you in, but they won't let you die. And it's true. I'll never be a Mainer in how they define a Mainer. Mm-hmm. But I feel like one of them in how they've embraced me and in how they've not let me die, in the sense that I get the support that I need and I have this sense of community. Coming back to you, I know that what you do is amazing. And that I'm here, but I'm here in a space that your people occupied before all of us showed up. And we all exist in this space now where we're contributing to this culture mm-hmm. that the future will look back to and fully define it as complete because we added spice to it and made it beautiful. Do you have any thoughts on any of that?
Let's go back to first contact. Yeah. If you were to strip away all of the colonial stuff that happened, it's well documented that we welcomed with open arms exactly. until we got burned, and then the story changed. I think it's all about the energy. And I understand the descendants and the ancestors of all the colonial stuff that happened. They're not the ones that did it. Totally understand that. I think what we really need to do, and I'm certainly not the first one to say this, is we can't ignore what happened. We can't pretend it didn't happen. What we need to do is we all need to acknowledge it. We all need to learn from it, make sure that it doesn't ever happen again, and stop being divided and compartmental, like I'm this and you're that, and we're all humans. There's only one race, it's human race. We just come in all different kind of spices. We're evolving out of that. And I really feel like if we're going to keep moving forward, mm-hmm. that we need to elevate our frequencies, we need to evolve, we need to hold on to what our culture is and makes us special, but that doesn't mean that our culture is the culture. I really feel like that's where this ship is sailing, you know, and some people are just going to miss the boat.
And for me, I always go back to a value system, and that's how I try to raise my kids. So if we can all focus on values that fully define a good human, mm-hmm. I think it will begin to change how we view things mm-hmm. and how people view the whole race question. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to wrap this up by asking some questions. Do you have any regrets at all?
I really don't. That's not to say that there's things that I wish I could have done differently. I learned from it. And how can I regret? It's all about learning and growing and not repeating things of the past.
It feels appropriate to end this with another song or a prayer of some sort.
I would love to sing another song for you. This song we sing, it's called Elabajigwe, and we sing it as a blessing when people are getting ready to leave or go on a journey. And the words in our language tell you to return to this place right here.
A huge thank you to all of you, our listeners, for tuning in today. A special thanks to Healthy Acadia, The Criterion, The Main Justice Foundation, and our radio host, WERU. Learn more about our next episode by visiting our website, downeastdiversity.com. I'm Aline Siston, your host. Until next time, Asanteni. Thank you.